got a lot tied up inside. Got Jesus on your mind. And a boy that just won't fight. Baby, it's a grind. And this your bitter light. Where nothing just won't do. The girl pleads. The woman needs a wedding ring. That bird won't sing.
Everybody, welcome to
episode 2016-18
of This Conversation Rocks. I'm Diane.
And I'm Todd in Los Angeles.
And tonight we're going to make a little bit of a departure from our current political bent and talk about epidemics. But first...
Thank God. Starting with the epidemic, of course, in Cleveland.
Right. Okay.
Nah, there's nothing left to say about the Republican National Convention. It's over. And, you know, tonight, you know, we did make history for the first time in the United States. We have a woman who is officially a candidate for president.
Well, you know, and I have to say, so I watched probably an equal amount of the both of them. I didn't see the full conventions for either party. But I have to say, as I've been watching the Democratic Party, I have thought, these people look more like me, they think more like me.
Sure.
They truly represent the diversity of our country.
They pee more like me.
Yeah. They don't care who pees next to them.
Exactly. No, so, it's hard to get around the fact that there's one party that looks more like America than the other. I'll let our listeners draw their own conclusion, but hey, before we get too far into it, though, hey, we are now on Google Play.
Hey, cool.
Yeah.
So tell those of us who don't use Google Play what exactly that means.
Means just like on iTunes, you can now get us on Google.
Ah, okay, that's cool. I didn't realize they had their own kind of version of iTunes. So, well done, Netmaster.
Well, I'm only 2 months behind. Apparently, they approved us back in April.
Oh, how funny! Well, you've been a little bit busy this summer.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit.
So, to get away from the political for a little bit, we decided that we would talk about epidemic disease. And I think the place where we really jumped off is that we wanted to talk about Zika.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I did, of course, is I looked up pandemic.
Right.
Right. And interestingly enough, there was an article published just today from Vox. I'm not sure how reliable Vox is. I've seen their stuff out there a little bit lately. They seem all right. But this was definitely, holy shit, Florida's going to die.
Well, so it's pretty funny that you say that and you found that today, because I opened up my email this morning and what's in my email but a notification from the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, which is our professional group, our professional certifying group, about Zika. So apparently the Nurse Practitioner Association agrees that Florida is going to die. So, you know, I think just talking about what Zika is might be a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, so aside from being a mosquito-borne virus that causes some serious birth defects and is going to ruin the Rio Olympics, what do we really know about this thing?
Well, so here's the thing. Not tons. I actually went to the CDC and looked at the various things that they have on their website, and I just want to preface that by saying what the Nurse Practitioner Association said in their bulletin. Zika could affect more than 1.6 million childbearing age women in the Americas. And this is like now, we're talking now. And they're calling this the first phase of the epidemic. And what they say is that as a result of that, tens of thousands of infants are at risk of Zika-related birth defects. So, you know, I think when we're talking about Zika, about people like you and me who aren't having children, are past childbearing age, you know, and are relatively healthy otherwise, Zika's a bummer. But if you're talking about a woman who is childbearing, Zika is potentially extremely serious. So I think that's part of the reason we're seeing so much conversation around it. It actually was kind of a known and followed illness in Africa previously, but it's really this year that it's become widespread throughout Central America, South America, the Pacific Islands. So it's really become much more of a concern this year than it has been previously. Let's see. So far in the U.S., there have been 433 pregnant women exposed to Zika within the U.S. and the District of Columbia, and then 422 reported in U.S. territories. Total Zika cases reported this year, and this is up to date as of July 21st, in the U.S., 1,658, in U.S. territories, 4,750. So those numbers don't seem huge, but then when you think about how relatively easily it's spread, that is a concern.
And when you say territories, you mean Puerto Rico.
Right. And Puerto Rico is a big area that is being looked at. I kind of did a look into the maps that they had on the CDC website, of the areas of the U.S. that are at risk. So right. we really don't have any areas within the United States, not the territories, but the states themselves, where it's being spread currently. But then I looked at the map, and it's basically about one third of the continental U.S., East Coast, the South, and then up into California on the West Coast. And then places like Hawaii, Puerto Rico. So, you know, we certainly do have risk because those are areas where the mosquitoes that spread Zika are common, easily found.
Right. So I've seen several things that indicate, though, that, like, yeah, this can't really take hold in the greater United States because the mosquitoes that can carry it don't actually survive in most of the United States.
I think the only thing that's concerning when you think and talk about that is that it can be sexually transmitted. Right. So, and, you know, in addition to being transmitted by mosquito bites, it can be sexually transmitted. It can be transmitted in blood transfusions. And there have even been cases of people who were working in labs and had exposure to the Zika virus, contracted it from lab exposure. So,
right, because it's easy to catch. It doesn't have any real traumatic symptoms.
Right, and that's a really good point. I mean, it basically sounds like when you have a Zika infection, you have really mild symptoms that are kind of like a lousy flu. So you have fever, rash, joint pain, muscle pain, conjunctivitis, which is basically pink eye, and headaches. So it's like having a really bad cold or flu.
Yeah, which it's a really smart when you think about it. As far as viruses go, it's a really smart one because it doesn't kill the host.
Right.
It reproduces itself really easily.
Right.
And it doesn't... It doesn't impact the host all that much. I mean, not only does it not kill us, but it doesn't impact us all that greatly. And unless, like...
Okay. Go ahead.
Unless, like you said, you're talking about women of childbearing age.
Well, and the other thing that's really significant in terms of the intelligence of the virus, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy freak here, but a friend of mine said this...
God. See, when you say that... The problem is that whenever you say that, the next statement that comes out of your mouth... has to be tinfoil brigade time.
Right. But, you know, a friend of mine said this about HIV years and years ago, and I think it's really true. When a virus or bacteria is able to link itself to transmission by sexual behavior, that's a very smart virus or bacteria. Because what's the thing that we're not going to stop doing?
Oh, right.
You know? Right. So,
but I mean, the thing is that, I mean, even smarter, though, is something that can be borne by mosquitoes.
Right. Because what's the thing we're not going to stop doing? Getting bitten by mosquitoes.
Right. I mean, your propensity to get bitten by a mosquito is far higher than your propensity to actually have sex.
Yes, I think there's a very real truth in that.
You know, but what's interesting, though, is, like I said, the early evidence, and we'll see if this bears out, but the early evidence suggests that the type of mosquito that does transmit this can't live much outside of really humid tropical areas, Florida, the Deep South, Hawaii.
Nah, you know, those maps that I was looking at on the CDC website were actually maps that were looking at where the two different species of mosquitoes can live in the U.S.
Yeah.
And like I said, they were pretty much down the East Coast, all across the South, and then up into California. So we actually do have, you know, a fair number of states where...
Well, then... okay, yeah, no, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I'm just going to go with, once again, hey, the news media's got that story kind of wrong.
Yeah, I do think in this case, the CDC is probably a little more reliable.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I totally agree with you on that, right? And it just wasn't following fast enough. But this is interesting, right? Because, like, you know, so everybody's now reporting, of course, this rapid spread across Puerto Rico.
Right.
But what does that really mean?
Because this is numbers or severity or
or
all of the above.
Right, because the problem is, and let's talk about pandemics in the recent past, right? Which is basically all the ones that never happened. Right? But at some point the media was like, "Oh my God, we're gonna die of bird flu."
Okay.
Everybody's going to go down on that. You
and
know,
the
and
one
just...
I have to bring up is Ebola. Remember the Ebola scare in 2014?
Ebola, right?
I mean, I actually was looking back at that because I was like, okay, trying to think of some of the things that there was an epidemic scare about that didn't really happen. And, you know, I think the thing that freaked people out about bird flu, about H1N1, is that there was a pandemic in 2009, and the people who were being impacted by flu deaths are not the population that we typically see. So we typically see the very young and the very old die of influenza, not with H1N1. It was young, healthy people. So, you know, although it didn't become the Spanish flu of 1918, I think it was freaking people out because young, otherwise healthy people were dying.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, but then what exactly makes it when does something actually become a pandemic?
Well, pandemic was more in terms of pattern of spread and numbers of spread, because a lot of people got sick with the flu, and there were a lot of people who tested positive for H1N1. I think the thing that turned it into a terrifying, oh my God, we're all going to die pandemic, because the flu is pandemic. All flus are pandemic. Every year we have a new strain of flu that sweeps through, and we have to try to predict and formulate a vaccine with guesswork. We think it's going to be this strain of flu this year.
Right.
So, you know, going back to the all flus are pandemic, but not all flus kill young, healthy people. So I think that's what turned it into an oh shit moment.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's interesting because I'm actually looking, right? And the CDC... CDC estimated that somewhere between 150 and 575,000 people perished worldwide from the 2009 H1N1, which
again, you know, is not Spanish flu.
It's not Spanish flu, and right. But I mean, it's this whole thing about our inability to really understand numbers sometimes. Mm-hmm. 150 to 500,000 people. That's, you know, obviously in some regard, that's a big number.
If you are a person whose loved one is affected, or if you're that person, it's right. a big number. If you're looking at the scheme of 7 billion human beings, it's nothing.
It's nothing.
Yeah, and, you know, all I can say is that...
All you can say is that you used to work for a clinic in Alaska that when Ebola, when the Ebola scare came up, was spending fucking money on getting ready for Ebola outbreaks,
you know,
in Alaska.
I have
and that's the problem.
I've got to tell you, that totally came to mind when I was getting ready for this podcast today. I was like, you know, I just remember in 2014 being surrounded by posters about, have you traveled? These are the symptoms of Ebola. This is what you need to do if you come in contact with Ebola. And having a nurse educator who was completely obsessed about talking to people about Ebola. But we're not fucking talking to people about the flu or hepatitis C, which, let me tell you, I've got a long rant about hepatitis C saved up for later. Yeah,
there's actually an epidemic, right?
That is actually an epidemic. The other thing that I kind of ran across while I was prepping for this and looking at Ebola is that, you know, our country denied visas to people from affected countries. We quarantined returning healthcare workers from those countries when those healthcare workers had no symptoms.
Clearly weren't going to have any symptoms.
And you remember when Chris Christie locked up that, quarantined that nurse.
Yep.
And she threatened to sue him for quarantining her because she didn't have Ebola. And he said, get in line. But the other thing is, because
the problem is that he was trying to score political points right. by scaring the shit out of New Jersey, right?
Well, you know, and unfortunately, disease becomes politicized. I mean, I think that's a perfect example.
Absolutely. And this is the whole problem, right? Is the Zika thing serious, right?
I think it has the potential to be. I think it's real. Yeah. I don't know.
And this is the whole thing, is that, I mean, I agree. I think it does have the potential to be serious, but we have to treat this stuff in the media a whole lot better. It cannot be fucking outbreak 2016.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, it can't be Ebola, Ebola, oh. Ebola.
Right. I mean, you know, basically, it's The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, what's really funny is when I Googled something like pandemics that didn't really happen, because I was just looking for different things to talk about during this podcast, the first hit that came up was Fear the Walking Dead. And I thought, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect.
Because, yeah, I mean, this is the whole thing, right? And, I mean, it goes back to all those really bad outbreak movies back in the, late 80s? Early 90s?
Early 90s, I think, were the outbreak movies.
You know.
We've since gotten better at the whole outbreak thing.
You know, this is the problem, is that it is very hard to look at the media and go, oh, well, yeah, I need to worry about that.
Well, and it's even hard to look at numbers like 1.6 million childbearing women are potentially going to be affected throughout the Americas and think, okay, but is that significant?
Right. Because again, you know, if unfortunately you contract this, it's significant. We're not saying otherwise. Right. But yeah, in terms of this outbreak mentality, right, yeah, is, you know, I don't think so. And so here's the next question. What happens? You got it, right? Does this stick around forever?
No.
Does it pass? So, like, you know, you could be a woman of childbearing age who's not pregnant, be exposed to Zika, you know, contract it, and then later be okay.
That is actually a great question. And based on the reading that I did today, it looks like you can be exposed, and even if you're exposed during a pregnancy and you have a terrible outcome with that pregnancy, you do appear to have immunity in future circumstances. So you're not going to get it again. The risk is if you get it while you're pregnant.
Okay. So it is a narrow window.
It is. It's a fairly narrow window, but it sounds like, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent from
right. Well, because the problem is pregnancy is a 9-month thing, so
right.
You know, so it's plenty of time to get exposed, right? Yes, yeah, so, I mean, there are, it's a whole thing there, but yeah, I mean, so, but again, you know, going back to this epidemic, pandemic, outbreak concept that the media tends to focus on a little bit too much. This one's going to go through us and then kind of pass on, right?
I don't know. I think so. I think so, but I don't know. There are things like malaria that, you know, are constantly recurring things.
Right.
Maybe this will be at that level of infection. Not epidemic by any stretch, but a bad deal when you get it, you know.
And I mean, to a great degree of my conversation about this really just goes back around to the fact that we're really bad at understanding the odds of shit.
Exactly. Well, you know, and I think the other thing is, and this is somewhat comparable to H1N1, and H1N1 primarily impacting young, healthy adults. So we're seeing a disease that, again, is sexually transmitted, as well as vector-borne, mosquito-borne. And the people who are the most impacted are mothers, so women of childbearing age, and the children that they have if they end up with a Zika infection while they're pregnant. Right. Because, you know, we haven't really talked about the consequences of a Zika infection for a baby, but these babies can be born with and tend to be born with microcephaly, which means their heads are really, really small. They're like half the size of a normal baby's head. And what that usually means is that they've got poor brain development, smaller brains. Some of the kids can have seizures, developmental delays, trouble feeding. I mean, all sorts of complications and things that are going to, at the very least, take lifelong support. You know, these are not going to be, quote, normal, unquote, kids. They're going to take a lifetime of support. So we're looking at a tragic thing that happens to childbearing women and their children that has lifelong consequences, both emotionally for the family, economically for the family and the society. So I think that's part of the reason people are getting so freaked out, too. And you add the whole thing about the Olympics, which, you know, you kind of joked about it at the beginning, and I think it is, to a certain degree, laughable, but it's the thing, I think, that's really turned it into a panic, because all of a sudden Zika's on everybody's lips because of the risk with the Rio Olympics.
Well, I wouldn't go.
Well, you know, it was interesting, because I looked at what the travel notices were. For the CDC, and there are travel notices right now in regards to Zika specifically for the Caribbean, Central America, Pacific Islands like Micronesia, Tonga, the Marshall Islands, Fiji, and South America. And then there's actually a special separate travel notice for the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so I clicked under that because I wanted to see what they were telling travelers. And, you know, I think this is good advice for all of us if we're going to be traveling to a potentially infected area. So you should be up to date on all of your routine vaccinations. You should follow other travel precautions, like if you look at the area and malaria prophylaxis is recommended or yellow fever vaccinations are recommended, you should go ahead and adhere to those precautions as well. But here are some things that we don't normally think about. They recommended getting travel insurance, which includes evacuation insurance. So, you know, let's say you go to Rio, you get infected with it, and you, A, want to be compensated for a trip that you've missed, and B, want to get out of South America and get back to the U.S. for care. Really, the only way that that is a reasonable thing for most people is to have some kind of travel insurance. And, I actually saw this happen to a lot of tourists in Alaska when I was working in a rural ER. They would get stranded because of a medical emergency, and if they had travel insurance, they were treated like kings and queens because everything was just taken care of for them. But if they didn't have traveler's insurance, they were on their own.
Yeah,
they were on their own. So, you know, I thought that was a really good recommendation. I mean, another recommendation that even as a healthcare provider, I don't always think about is take a travel health kit with you. Monitor travel warnings, obviously prevent mosquito bites. And specifically for Rio, the CDC has basically said that they recommend that pregnant women just do not go to the Olympics, period.
Right. And yeah. And that kind of says it all, right?
Right.
Don't go.
I think another thing, just a couple of other factoids about it, because I didn't really know much about it before I was looking today. It can be confirmed that you have the illness by either a blood draw or a urine confirmation. Another reason this is such a huge deal is there's no way to prevent the illness with a vaccination. The only thing you can do is prevent transmission, which is not get bit and not sleep with somebody who has it. and there's no treatment if you do get it.
Right, which then does lead us back to politics, right? Because the fucking House failed to pass any spending to try to deal with this before they went out on vacation.
And so then it makes you question, okay, are they just not doing their job as they've done for months? Do we really need comprehensive Zika legislation? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, I think the answer is that, I mean, we're the United States. We have some money that we can burn on research and, you know, help.
And it does have the potential to be very significant.
Yeah, right. But I think, you know, once again, Congress, for the most part, we have a combination of things, particularly in the House, where you have Tea Party who, you know, basically refuses to spend a dollar on anything. And I also think that they're kind of looking at it as, oh, it's Rio's problem. It's a Brazilian thing. It's not, you know, it's not a United States thing.
Which is pretty damn funny, because we can stick our heads in the sand for now. But again, you know, 3 years from now, we might say this was another Ebola scare. 3 years from now, we might say this is the Spanish flu.
Right, or probably somewhere in the middle, 3 years from now, this is like Nile virus.
Right.
Just something that's hanging around forever.
And it's real.
It's real. It kills a certain number of people or causes, you know, a certain amount of infant mortality or damage.
And livestock.
Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, and
it's interesting, because without regard to the Zika, I saw something before Zika where somebody was talking about the mosquito abatement programs throughout the United States, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that states aren't paying as much for mosquito abatement as they were. And so what are you seeing? And it had nothing to do with Zika. You were starting to see more and more illness because of mosquito-borne crap.
That's very interesting. I did not realize that.
Yeah, so, you know.
Well, you know, and it just kind of goes along with everything else that we get complacent about. We ignore it for a while, and then it pops up in some shape or form. You know, I was thinking about childhood vaccines, and there are a lot of diseases that were pandemic a century ago that we don't see anymore. And here we go again, right? I mean, we get complacent, we stop paying attention, people stop vaccinating, and you know, I could very well in my lifetime see medical illnesses, serious medical illnesses that I never thought I would treat. I mean, even talking about treating whooping cough, which I've said before, I've seen and treated whooping cough.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
And get your fucking vaccinations. That's
and fund some research so that we can have vaccinations for things like Zika. Or yeah. Things like hepatitis C, which, again, I'm going to rant about in a little bit here.
I think we might be there.
Well, you know, so we were talking about Zika, possibly an epidemic that's very serious. You and I, when we were planning the other night, we were talking about things that, okay, really were made into a big deal. And, yeah, you know, if you live in Sierra Leone and you lost a lot of family and friends to Ebola, it's a big deal.
Right.
If you live in the U.S. and 4 reported cases have occurred in the country,
right.
It's not a big deal.
Right. And what, one of those was fatal?
Yeah. Yeah, there were 4 reported cases in 2014 and 1 was fatal. And all 4 of them were people who had worked overseas in...
Or traveled
in an area where Ebola was endemic and came home with the illness. But anyway, so, you know, we were talking about real epidemics, things that aren't epidemics and things that are truly epidemics that people aren't talking about. And I've got to say, the first thing that came to my mind was hepatitis C. I mean, I've mentioned it to you. I don't know how much I've said on the podcast. I am seeing numbers of hepatitis C that I never, ever thought I would see, considering, you know, now that I'm working somewhere where I'm dealing with a population that's at much higher risk. It's unbelievable to me. And I think that's a silent epidemic that we're not really talking about. So, of course...
So, let's talk about it.
I was going to say, of course, being the numbers gal, I looked at...
Tell me about it. Because, I mean, I'll be honest, right? Hepatitis C is not something really in my direct reality.
Well, and you know...
So, and I think a lot of people feel that way.
And here's the deal. It actually is in all of our direct realities. We just don't realize it. So, you know, there are three types of hepatitis that we really diagnose and monitor, care for. A is the food type. You know, it's from people not washing their hands and prepping food. B is sexually transmitted and transmitted through needle sharing. Used to be transmitted through transfusions, but now we have a way of monitoring our blood supply. C is largely needle or blood. There's a very, very limited chance of C getting transmitted through sexual transmission. What we're really seeing is the numbers of hepatitis C are going up because the number of IV drug users are going up. And, you know, I know that we keep talking about how we're going to do a heroin not just for hillbillies anymore episode. And this directly is linked to, to heroin use in this country. You know, and I mean, to kind of make a little bit of a segue off of the subject for a little bit, I just, you know, I hear all of the time from the population with which I'm working about Harvoni. Harvoni is the new drug for hepatitis C.
Okay.
Harvoni is such a big deal right now that it's getting heavy ad play on TV. Lots of advertisements about Harvoni. I want to say that I honestly can't tell you how much it is, but it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars for a course of Harvoni, which is 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 weeks, I think. Anyway, so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, you know that something is a problem when the drug to treat it is being heavily marketed, you know? You know it's profitable and it's a real problem because the company that makes Harvoni is marketing it heavily.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like crazy stuff like, you know, you didn't realize maybe what a huge problem opiate addiction was until you started seeing ads for the drug to treat opiate-induced constipation. There's a market for it, a very profitable market for it. You know, so you can always kind of take a clue from the drug companies. If they've got any way to profit from something that's big, they will. The irony is, I also think that the people who suggest that our heroin problem and our hepatitis problem are heavily related to the marketing of opiates, specifically OxyContin in this country, are really right on. So, you know, the drug industry has really given us signals about how big the problem of hepatitis C is, and people just don't realize it. So, you know, I could go on, and I probably will, but the main sources of hepatitis C now in our country are IV drug use or getting a tattoo from someone who's not a professional. Like, I work in a prison, and a lot of inmates will get prison tattoos. And, you know, they're not using sterile technique, they're not using sterile instruments, they're recleaning instruments, they're hiding them in weird ways to try to keep from getting caught. It's just not safe. And you're already dealing with a population that has high numbers of Hep C, so huge risk of passing it around.
Right.
But I think the thing that's really... really stunning and makes me believe that we all are impacted by Hep C way more than we realize we are, is that they figure that there are 70 to 85% of people who get exposed who develop long-term infection. They're figuring right now that there's some, and these are old numbers, these are not 2016 numbers, but there's somewhere between 2.7 and 3.9 million Americans who are living with a chronic hepatitis infection, hepatitis C. Our heroin problem is steadily on the rise. So about a third of people who are in the 18 to 30 year old group of heroin users are Hep C infected. People who are older users or former users from the 70s, where we didn't really know what Hep C was or how to screen for it, have an even higher rate of infection. They figured 70 to 90% of those people are infected. In 2011, just to kind of link it with the heroin use, 4.2 million Americans 12 or older used at least once. And 23% of those were anticipated to become dependent on heroin. And we've been seeing a steady rise in the rate of heroin use since 2007. So it's a problem that's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Especially because we're just seeing so much IV drug use. It's really incredible. And it's the 18 to 25 year olds who are really heavily using IV drugs. I read a thing on the CDC website that said that in 2006, it was estimated that there were 90,000 first-time uses in America. In 2012, that had gone from 90,000 first-time users in the year to 156,000 first-time users. And if you think there's been if you just think, okay, there's been a steady increase since then, you know, I'd wager we're probably up over 200,000 first-time users. So people are just starting their heroin use in 2016.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess it just became such a big deal to me because I see so much of it on a weekly basis. I mean, I'm going to say I probably, just in my little corner of the universe, tell 5 to 10 people every week that they've got a hepatitis C infection. That's just me in my right. little tiny area of rural Alaska. The other thing that's really interesting is they think that probably 60 to 70% of the people who have a chronic infection are going to go on to develop chronic liver problems. 5 to 20% of those are going to develop cirrhosis of the liver, which basically means chronic inflammation, destruction of cells, fibrotic changes in the liver, so changes in the cells that are still alive, which basically means that the liver can't filter waste products anymore, which is what its job is. And as a result, between 1 to 5% of people are going to die as a result of their hepatitis, either liver failure or cancer.
Wow.
So, you know, when you stop and think that, first of all, it's a young person's problem. We're seeing tons and tons of young people infected. And, you know, 1 to 5 out of every 100 is going to die as a result. That's pretty significant. It's really interesting because when I talk with people, when I diagnose people, their first reaction is always, oh, thank God, at least you're not telling me I have AIDS. You know? And I'm like, yeah, but you know, relatively speaking, the risk of getting an HIV infection from what you're doing is so much smaller than the risk of getting a hepatitis infection. And your risk of long-term disability and death as a result of hepatitis is really significant. It's just, it's always kind of stunning to me that people have that reaction. It just tells me that we haven't educated people very well about the significance of a hepatitis infection.
Right. I totally agree with you. And again, you know, we're just really bad at understanding risks, and that's why people react the way they do.
Right.
Because
they think the worst thing that could happen to them is an HIV infection. And right. really, no, there are a lot worse things that could happen to you that are much more likely.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing, if there's any saving grace in giving this diagnosis to someone, is that there's very, very rare sexual transmission with hepatitis C. Now, like I was saying earlier, Hep B is really commonly sexually transmitted. Hepatitis C, the estimate is between 0 and 3% of people who are infected can pass that on to their partner. So almost no risk of transmission.
Right.
They do recommend that people who are not in a long-term monogamous relationship use protection, but they don't recommend that it's not necessarily a recommendation, let me put it that way, that someone who's in a long-term monogamous relationship uses condoms, because the feeling is if the partner hasn't already gotten it, the risk is so rare they're not going to get it.
Okay.
The other thing that's kind of fascinating about Hep C, which I didn't realize until I started doing what I'm doing now, is that there are so many different genotypes, so which basically means there's tons of different strains of hepatitis C. So your genotype can be significant for a few reasons. It indicates what treatment you're going to be responsive to. So, you know, there are treatments that will work for one strain of Hep C that won't work for another. But you can also get infection by more than one genotype of hepatitis C. So you can be clicking along, kind of hanging in there with a chronic infection, but something that's not really impacting your liver function, get exposed to another genotype of hepatitis C, and then suddenly tip over into serious acute liver problems as a result of that co-infection with another strain.
Okay. That doesn't sound good.
No, it's not good. I've actually seen it fairly recently, and it's not pretty. And, you know, I think people, especially, again, people who are taking big risks, like using IV drugs, getting tattoos while in prison, you know, they're not thinking about things like that, and they're not educated about things like that, that, yeah, you've got it, but that doesn't mean you're not going to get it again or get another type of it.
Right. Because this will keep coming around if you're not careful.
Right.
But it is highly preventable, too, right?
So
from what you've been saying.
Exactly. So you just don't engage in the behaviors that lead to hepatitis C infection. You don't do IV drugs. And if you're going to get a tattoo, get it done by a professional. I mean, you know, I'm not adverse to tattoos. My God, I love the ones that I've got. But get them done by somebody who knows what they're doing, who's not reusing stuff, who's properly autoclaving stuff that has to be reused. Yeah, I mean, you prevent it by not engaging in risky behaviors.
Right.
The other thing that people need to know is that while hepatitis A and hepatitis B are vaccine preventable, Hep C is not. So, you know, saying I've got my hepatitis vaccines isn't enough. It's only going to protect you against a couple of strains. I know. We were talking about Zika, and now I'm ranting about hepatitis.
No.
It's just
no.
Much, you know, to me, that just seems much more fresh, and I'm sure it's because of the experiences I'm now having.
Sure, but
it also seems so much more likely.
Also brings me back around, though, to the concept of harm reduction, and something that, when I first moved to Seattle, and this was quite a while ago, and it doesn't happen anymore in Seattle or in most cities, but when I first moved to Seattle, we had needle exchange programs just to keep things like C from getting out of control.
Well, you know, and if we ever do get around to doing our heroin episode, there actually are still some good harm reduction strategies being employed. And Seattle is one of the primary places where harm reduction is still being heavily used. But yeah, absolutely. Needle exchange, treating people who have a heroin addiction with something like methadone or something like Suboxone, getting them off of the heroin. Yeah, I really, really, really just changing their risk. If they're not going to change their behavior, at least making their behavior less risky, you know? I had a guy the other day that I saw who, God bless his heart, he's dodged hepatitis so far, but he does have a serious IV drug problem. And I said, for heaven's sake, you know, please, please get some Narcan. Please find an area where there are needle exchange programs. If you're not going to change your behavior, at least change your risk.
Right.
And it goes back to really talking about media and talking about what you were saying. I mean, let's talk about real risks. Yeah, I think Zika is probably a real risk, at least in some sort of fairly limited fashion. The way that we treated Ebola in this country was ridiculous. The way that we don't talk about Hep C risks, and even still, although it's much more treatable, HIV risk in this country, it's astonishing to me. I mean,
yeah.
Hep C should be front page news every day. And yeah, I'm a little biased because I'm, again, working with an at-risk population, but you don't even hear people talk about it.
No. No, well, and the of course, the main reason you don't hear anybody talk about it is because of the perception of who it is that is likely to be impacted by this.
Right,
because
you deserve it if you're shooting up.
Right.
But what they don't realize is that their mother next door is the person who's shooting up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's another thing, and I think we'll talk about it more when we talk about heroin, but, you know, we have this idea that that skinny kid on the streets with crazy hair and multiple tattoos is the only one who's at risk. And when you look at what's really happening in our country, that's just not true.
Right. Right. So.
Yeah. Boy, what a happy departure from politics we've had.
Yeah. And how much of a departure is it really, right? Because right. It still comes down to, if we could do better, you know, we could fund these things. We could put in needle exchange programs to deliberately reduce these issues and stuff. And it's not, another thing with needle exchange is it's not about approving of the fact that somebody's an IV drug user or right. not. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the fact that you're just acknowledging that there's a problem that exists that can be dealt with.
But I think you're absolutely right. It turns political on the level of how we spend our money, and it turns political on exactly that level, because there is that group in our culture who believes that if you make something less risky, if you give people Narcan to prevent overdose, if you give people free access to clean needles, you're somehow condoning what they're doing.
Because I'm telling you, the only thing that's kept me from shooting up
is dirty needles.
It's dirty needles. You know, being afraid of getting hepatitis C. That's exactly what keeps me from shooting up.
But, you know, it kind of goes into that deeper, and here we are getting political again. It goes into that deeper belief in our country about, like, who's a worthy person and who's not. And, you know, who's living the right life and who's not. And I think that's deeply political and deeply religious. I think it's really grounded in those two ideologies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think about it and I look at some of the people that I know have survived heroin addiction. I think I've probably mentioned this guy to you before. There's a great teacher in a Buddhist tradition out of L.A. who started his early life addicted to crack and heroin. And if he had not gotten clean and not survived, he wouldn't be here to be the great teacher that he is now. And yeah. he's created this tremendous program called Refuge Recovery, which is a Buddhist-based recovery program, but it's also very realistic. You know, it's also about harm reduction and about education and about supporting people at their worst times, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I look at some of the guys that I interact with and who have these diagnoses, and I think that could be the next Noah Levine, who is the guy out of California. I mean, who am I to judge whether their life is worthy or whether they're choosing the, quote, right path?
Right.
Isn't it more humane and compassionate and realistic to say, dude, if you get out and you're still doing heroin, find clean needles, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. much more important.
And, you know, and going back to some of the other things that we're talking about, you know, maybe that's why we talk about things like Zika, which affects pregnant women. And we don't talk about things like hepatitis C, which affects people who get tattoos and use drugs. You right. know, I mean, it's much more clean, compassionate, holy, whatever you want to, whatever term you want to apply, to care about those poor little pregnant women than it is to care about some junkie on the street.
Well, exactly.
In America, in certain thoughts. Yeah. Yeah.
America will do anything for a pregnant woman.
Right. Short of helping her feed that pregnant or feed the product of the pregnancy when she's delivered. Short
well, that's, of that. A, that's a different thing.
That's right. After that's a mother. That, that's not a pregnant woman.
Right. Yeah.
America will do anything to help a pregnant woman, but not a mother.
Right. Exactly. Right. And which goes to the heart of where we're kind of fucked up.
We are so fucked up.
Well, you know, we're not going to do anything to solve that problem come November.
Oh my God. I know. I know.
But I'm not going to talk about that.
Well, I'm going to kind of talk about that. So let's leave the world of infectious disease. Do you have any fuck that guys or any Hall of Honorable mention?
No, I mean, I got to be honest, right? Other than looking up stuff for Zika and just some of that stuff.
You've been working.
And not only have I been working, but like even when I'm not working, I'm not doing the news. I haven't been doing the news for the last 2 weeks because all it'll do is make me mad and I'll want to throw things at people or whatever, you know?
Well, trust me, I have been watching for the both of
us. Right, and it made you mad, right?
Well, you know, it has. It's made me sad. It's made me cry. I mean, I was thinking, okay, it's the history of head injury. I'm much more easily moved to tears than I was. But, I mean, there have definitely been moments with the Democratic Convention where I have been manipulated to tears.
Right.
I mean, genuinely moved to tears in some circumstances, but sharply, mostly, easily, connivingly manipulated to tears.
I think that that's a really good observation.
You know, there were definitely times that I was finding myself weeping, and when, like, today they had a group of mothers who lost their children to gun violence talk, and I cried. No, actually today I think was the families of police officers who lost their police officers to gun violence. I cried and cried and cried, and I thought, you know, yes, there is a place of me that has compassion for these individual people, but I'm being completely manipulated into this response by the way this is being presented.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad. The only thing I can say is that this year the Dems were much better at that than the Republicans were. So, but I do have a couple of fuck that guys, and these were actually from last week, but I thought, oh, we talked about politics so much that I'm not going to hurt us more, so I'll do it this week instead. So, my big fuck that guy out of the Republican National Convention, Alex Jones, leader of the Tinfoil Hat Brigade, and Roger Stone. Did I talk to you about these guys at all?
No.
So they blasted onto the set of the Young Turks while they were broadcasting from the Republican National Convention. And
I remember you talking about this vaguely.
Yeah, and so they totally disrupted the Young Turks broadcast, and they were offensive. Maybe I did talk about it in our last podcast, and I just didn't realize it. So, you know, they bothered me a lot. The other fuck that guy, and I'm pretty sure I didn't talk about this one, was Roger Ailes of Fox News.
Oh, I can't believe we haven't talked about him.
No, but yeah. We haven't talked about Roger Ailes. So, you know, for those of our listeners who live under a rock, which is none of you, because you found us somehow. But, you know, Roger Ailes was the head of Fox News. There came, within the past few weeks, there have been tons of allegations, including Gretchen Thompson, that's wrong. What's her name?
I don't know.
She's one of the Gretchen. Anchor. Yeah, she was one of the anchors.
Anyway.
She actually has a lawsuit pending against Roger Ailes.
Right.
regarding sexual harassment.
Right.
And it sounds like this guy just has a huge history of being a serial harasser and potentially even an assaulter for the last 40 years.
Right.
And so he finally got driven out of Fox News this week, thank God. And you know what Donald Trump's response was?
No, I do not know what his response was.
His response was, he has helped all of those women so much. They should be so grateful. They should be so lucky that he helped them the way that they did.
Right, and it's not going to sway a single person to not vote for him.
Right! So that's what I don't get. And this is not part of that, but it's a conversation I've been having with some friends online lately. I still don't get how Donald Trump can say outrageous things and then say, I never said that. Or, yeah, you know, do crazy things and said, I didn't do that. And his voters are just like, yeah, he didn't say that.
Yeah, and then you roll the tape and, yeah, of course he did.
But they still, they see the tape and they say, he didn't say that. I mean, I just don't get it.
Okay, but here's a little bit of good news. So you're seeing Trump's bump from last week is now starting to decline.
Oh, good. And what does 538 have to tell us this week?
Well, still putting a 53% chance of Hillary winning.
53?
53.7.
Oh, God. That's a low.
Yeah, but it bottomed out at 52.4.
So it's her chances starting to increase.
Yeah, well, she's getting the bump.
Yeah, then, she'll right? get a bump from the convention because it actually was a very well-managed convention, even with the dissension between the main party and the representatives of Bernie Sanders. It was well managed.
Yeah. The electoral votes look like crap, though.
So maybe what we need to do is like do a new segment called Hope from 538.
Yeah, but the problem is I'm trying, you know, I gotta stop looking at this so often.
Because it makes you kind of sick.
Yeah, well, yeah, you just get angry, right? Because it's not going the way you want it to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not foolish. There's a chance that Trump is going to win this.
There's a very real chance.
On the other hand, what the fuck else can I do, right? You know, I'm going to work tomorrow, right?
Right.
I'm trying to earn the American dream.
And you're probably going to go to work on November 9th, regardless of whoever wins.
You might go
in with a hangover and a headache, but...
drink good quality booze. Don't have the hangover problem.
There you go.
It's been years and years since I've had that problem, and it's because I drink better quality booze.
So we'll be calling each other the night of the election and drinking in commiseration together.
God. Or not, you know, I mean, you know, because it can go our way too. We'll see what happens.
Well, you know, it's like Neil Gaiman says, when you are offered the choice of Armageddon or tea, you don't ask, what kind of tea?
Right. the problem is we're still choosing between, what is it, gonorrhea and...
Oh, what did Julian Assange say? Gonorrhea or... cholera.
Cholera.
Cholera can kill you, people. Gonorrhea is treatable with an antibiotic. Just think of our votes in terms of that.
Yep. But yeah, we'll continue to watch 538 and see how it goes. But, you know, it's really interesting because I've said this, I was talking about this last podcast too. You know, reading these books about randomness and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points it's made in there, and I do believe it, right, is that the more you read the newspapers, the less you know. And it's because, you know, and it's the same thing is true of, you know, however you're getting your news, because the problem is the news cycle is just repeating it over and over and over again.
Well, that must mean that Sarah Palin and Donald Trump know a hell of a lot.
No.
I'm joking.
That's a whole different...
whole different kind of ignorance.
Ignorance, yeah, exactly. But I noticed that, right? Like, I mean, because, you know, I've been, all last week, I'm looking at 538, you know, and it's like, it's an eighth of a percentage point different, you know, from the last time I looked at it. Yeah. Why am I, Yeah.
What is it about that eighth of a percentage point that's making a difference for you?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the whole thing, right? It's not that you should not be informed. Obviously, we should all be informed. It's just that the media cycle is such that there's only so much actual information to put out there. And after that, you're just regurgitating everything.
Yes, I agree. And,
you know, because like the Zika thing, I was just looking through, and now that you brought up the CDC thing, as I'm looking at all these other articles, all everybody's doing is just quoting and sometimes misquoting what information was put out by the CDC. So it's like, why not just repost the CDC post?
Right.
You know. Because unless you got a goddamn nurse practitioner to translate this stuff for you, you have no business writing about it.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Well, and we will talk when we do our heroin podcast about how spinning misinformation and spinning it led to our opiate problem in this country. Which, you know, then has led to our current heroin problem in this country. All it takes is that spin of a little bit of misinformation and we're all screwed.
Yep.
Well, all right. So we have two in the bank. I've got one I need to edit and get to you. We've got this one. We'll talk offline about what we're going to do next time. And I've got some Neil Gaiman for us.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so Signal to Noise seems to be a really pertinent volume right now. So this is another quote from Signal to Noise, which is one of the Sandman volumes, right?
No, it's it was a graphic novel, and it was set at the end of the first millennium.
Oh, I don't think I've watched, or I don't think I've read it then.
And yeah, it's quite good.
I'll have to check it out.
But basically, you know, people believe in the world was going to end.
Well, that's why it seems so very appropriate, I think.
Yeah.
So this quote, and I thought this was pertinent since we were talking about disease. We are always living in the final days. What have you got? 100 years or much, much less until the end of your world?
Absolutely true.
Yep. Well, on that note, to steal a page from the Democratic National Convention, go out and do all the good you can do.
Let's start with, you know, the Democrats doing some good.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I have the MoveOn.org petition for Zika funding up.
Oh, very good.
On our website, so.
Very good.
Please stop by and sign up. And let's try to get Congress to actually do something here.
And, you know, I just want to put a plug out there again, because I'm seeing so many more names that I haven't recognized before liking and commenting on our posts. If you've got something that you want to hear, if you've got something that you'd like for us to talk about, we're certainly open to ideas as well. I hope we continue to take a few breaks from politics. Because, I think you're right. I think it can get really exhausting.
Well, taking a break, not from politics.
Right, because you can't ever take a break from politics. We've proven that over and over again.
But from the election shit, sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably a better way to say it.
Yep. Let's see, El Hino on Twitter. Hey, thanks for giving us a shout out a couple times in the last couple months. Really do appreciate that. We need to probably do more with our Twitter feed, but oh well.
I'm a terrible tweeter, I will admit, right now.
yeah, absolutely. Hoping an old friend of mine has found us. Sasha, if you're listening, hey, I hope you like what you have to hear.
Right on.
And of course, always, Hannah, I miss you.
And I think that we may actually have a new listener named Chris. So, Chris, if you're listening, welcome aboard.
Absolutely. And if you want to drop us a line, it's thisconversationrocks@gmail.com. Or feel free to go to our website, thisconversationrocks.com.
And as always, post on Facebook.
Yeah.
All right.
Post on our website.
And you can tell who is the website guy and who is the Facebook queen.
Well, and we are now apparently on Google Play. So if you're looking for another way to get our podcast, and you should be, you should be getting this on every device, every way you can.
That's right.
But check us out on Google Play.
And while we're at it, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Because if you listen to us and you rate us on iTunes, it actually does increase the number of looks that we get. If you talk about us on iTunes, other people will potentially get the message as well.
Yep. So yeah, please, please. But yeah, check us out on Google Play. I will get a more permanent link up on the website as soon as I figure out what the hell Google's doing. But right now there is a link to it.
And I'm just going to take a second and plug the Preacher podcast again, probably. Of course. So if you're not watching Preacher, you should be. It's a really great show. And my little sister and I are doing a podcast called The Good News, The Gospel According to AMC's Preacher. So come on and check us out. It's been a lot of fun. And as always, Biters with Brian, The Walking Dead podcast.
Yep.
All right. Have a great week. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring.